Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Sai Name of the Sage Swami. We're reading the prayers by Indra, the King of Heaven, that he offered to Krishna, the King of all kings. When Indra came in a secluded place by what is now Govindakund. Have you been to Govindakund? How many times?
Two times.
So nice. And he was in a very, very humble mood. So first, I'd like to read the 11 prayers, 11 verses. So I'll read those first in the Bhagavatam, and then we'll hear what God said. First, and we'll try to get a feeling for Indra Maharaj wanted to tell Krishna. He committed a great blunder, and he was feeling very bad, and he was feared the offense. So therefore, this is what he said to Krishna. Your transcendental form, Indra Vatsa, Vasudha Sattvam Tavadhamma Santam. The transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change. Transcendental, which means manifested of pure goodness, Sudha Sattvam, and is undisturbed by change. It is shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. It does not exist, in you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. About Krishna's form. Next. How then could there exist in you the symptoms of an ignorant person, such as greed, lust, and envy, which have reduced to one's previous involvement in material existence and which cause one to become further entangled in material existence? So because your body is transcendental, in that body there is no lust, anger, or greed, or envy, which are caused by the most material nature and one's previous involvement in material existence. Since Krishna at no time had material existence, he has no modes of material nature. And yet, as a Supreme Lord, he imposed punishment to protect religious principles and curb down the wicked. So, in other words, the punishments that Krishna gives are coming from something other than the modes of material nature. So, if your body is transcendental, no modes of material nature affect you, and the punishments you give aren't springing from anger or envy or anything like that. The third verse, which is the sixth verse. You are the father and spiritual master of this entire universe, and also supreme controller. You are insurmountable time, imposing punishments upon the sinful for their own benefit. As the Supreme Controller, as you're the Father, because Krishna actually hasn't really punished Indra, but Indra is afraid of that Krishna is going to chastise him for his terrible acts. So he says, your chastisement isn't born like my deeds were born out of the modes of nature, out of pride and envy. But you, on the other hand, are the Supreme Father and Supreme Controller. You are time, and you impose punishment upon the sinful for their own benefit. Indeed, in your various incarnations, selected by your own free will, you are Swatantra, you are independent. And in those incarnations, you act decisively to remove the false pride of those who presume themselves masters of this world. So who is he just speaking about, who presumes himself the master of this world?
Himself.
Ah. Even fools like me, who proudly think themselves universal lords, quickly give up their conceit and directly take to the path of the spiritually progressive when they see that you are fearless even in the face of time. Thus you punish the mischievous only to instruct them. So again, the point that Krishna's punishments are just to instruct. So therefore, Indra again is afraid of, if because of a punishment is in proportion to the crime. Just like if someone does something very, very small as a crime, you won't get some light punishment. But if one does terrible, terrible things as a crime, tries to kill a whole country, a whole village, including cows, what kind of punishment is he going to get? Oh, too heavy. So Indra is somewhat afraid of this. So he's speaking very sweetly, and everything you do is very good. And I'm so much engrossed in pride over my ruling power, ignorant of your majesty, I offend you. O Lord, may you forgive me. My intelligence was bewildered, so that my consciousness never again be so impure. So I did what I did out of my ignorance. Ignorance is born of ignorance, of tamagun. So overcome by tamagun, pride is actually ultimately great ignorance. And also I was ignorant of your majesty, how powerful you were. And therefore, because of this ignorance, I offended you. Please forgive me. I never want this to happen again, he says. My intelligence was bewildered. And when one's intelligence is bewildered, one cannot see things in the proper perspective. So let my consciousness never again become so impure. You descended into this world, O Transcendental Lord, to destroy the warlords who burden the earth and create many terrible disturbances. What's the word for warlord that he uses? The military leaders. Samupattinam. So you've come for this purpose, to remove the burden upon the earth by these demons who have all so much military strength. But, O Lord, you simultaneously act for the welfare of those who faithfully serve your lotus feet. So who is a faithful servant? There are the demons, and there are the asuras and the suras. So Indra is seeing himself as an asura, basically a servant of Krishna, but overcome by pride. He services to rule, and that caused him to be overcome by pride. And the pride caused him to act in a horrendous way and try to destroy the kingdom of Raja and thereby offend Krishna. After all, you've come to destroy the demons, but I'm asura, I am your devotee. Obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Namastubhyam Bhagavate Purushaya Mahatmane Vasudevaya Krishnaya Satvatam Pataye Nama. Obeisance is unto you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the great soul who are all pervading and who reside in the hearts of all. My obeisance is unto you, Krishna, the chief of the Yadava dynasty. Unto him who assumes transcendental bodies according to the desires of his devotees. Unto him whose form is itself pure consciousness. Unto him who is everything, who is the seed of everything, and who is the soul of all creatures. I offer my obeisances, so these last two prayers, or verses, and offerings of obeisances to Krishna. after he says you've come to protect the devotees. 12. My dear Lord, when my sacrifice, now he's getting very specific about what he did. When my sacrifice was disrupted, I became fiercely angry because of pride. He said, because of false pride. And false pride is born of a false ego, a false sense of who one is. And who is one? Who are we? Just tiny, insignificant servants of Krishna. Jivera Sarupoi. Krishna did us. And thus, because of my anger to your false pride, I tried to destroy your coward community with severe rain and severe wind. O Lord, you have shown mercy to me by shattering my false pride and defeating my attempts to punish Vrindavan. To you, the Supreme Lord, the Spiritual Master and Supreme Soul, I have now come for shelter. Tamaham sharanam gata Ishwaram guru matmanam Tamaham sharanam gata. And those are Indian prayers. So the Tirtha Prabhupada describes them in Krishna book. My dear Lord Indra, being puffed up by my false prestige, I thought you had offended me by not allowing the coward men to perform the Indra Jagya. And I thought that you wanted to enjoy the offerings that were arranged for the sacrifice. I thought in the name of a Govardhan sacrifice you were taking my share of profit. And therefore I mistook your position. Now by your grace I can understand that you are the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead. And that you are transcendental to all material qualities. Your transcendental position is Vishuddha Sattva, which is above the platform of the material mode of goodness. And your transcendental abode is beyond the disturbance of the material qualities. So the modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, they cannot touch you. And I was thinking that you were greedy. And you were using Govardhan Puja as an excuse out of envy of me and out of greed for the sacrifice objects itself. You're using Govardhan Puja as an excuse, but actually it was me who was envious, that I was greedy. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are transcendental to all material qualities. Your transcendental position is Vishuddha Sattva, which is above the platform of the material mode of goodness. And your transcendental abode is beyond the disturbance of the material qualities. Your name, form, fame, qualities, paraphernalia, and pastimes are all beyond this material nature. And they are disturbed by the three material modes. Your abode is accessible only for one who undergoes severe austerities and penances and becomes completely free from the onslaught of material qualities like passion and ignorance. Because as long as we are contaminated by these qualities, we cannot go to the abode of Krishna. Because the abode of Krishna is beyond material modes of nature. We don't get a visa until we also are beyond the modes of material nature. If someone thinks that when you enter this material world, you accept the modes of material nature, he is mistaken. The waves of the material qualities are not able to touch you. And you certainly do not accept them when you are present within this world. Your lordship is never conditioned by the laws of material nature. So this is explaining, this is explaining Krishna's position, never touching the modes of material nature. So Indra has just realized this. Because looking at Krishna's activities, it's very difficult to understand that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because most of his activities appear quite common. activities that human beings can perform. But it is not true. That was his realization after Krishna taught him in a very wonderful way. My dear Lord, you are the original Father. So not only are you transcendental, but you're the source of everything. The Father is the source of the children. So Krishna is the original Father, not only the source of Indra, the source of who is Indra's father? Huh?
Brahma.
Huh? Brahma? Who is his brother? Who is known as the young brother of Indra? Vamanadev. And who is Vamanadev's father? Who is Vamanadev's mother? Aditi. And father? Kashyapa Muni. So you're the original father. Oh, you have come from Delhi just today. You have taken metro. Is there a metro in Janakpuri?
Yes.
Now already?
Two stations, Janakpuri East and Janakpuri
West. Very special. Even West Swan doesn't have metro. And you're also from Dwarka.
Janakpuri.
Where's Dwarka?
Yes.
Yeah, Dwarka, see? Even Dwarka is near where you are.
That's where the metro starts from.
Everything starts from there. Except Vrindavan. Dwarka starts from Vrindavan. Indra is speaking. You are the supreme spiritual master of this cosmic world. So you're the father. He's apologizing to Krishna. And you are the spiritual master. And you are the original proprietor of everything. As eternal time, you are competent to chastise offenders. What is the meaning of that? As eternal time, you are competent to chastise offenders.
No one can defeat time. Time defeats everyone.
Time has the capacity to chastise anyone. The word for capacity is competency. So Krishna in his form of time was to speak of in the form of the source of time, because the time is the energy of Paramatma, the Shakti of Paramatma. So Krishna is the source of Paramatma. His energy is time. Will must chastise everyone. In what sense does time chastise everyone? Death and?
Old age.
And?
Diseases.
And?
Deterioration of everything we try to acquire and accumulate.
Yes. And?
Rebirth.
It pushes. We may like it, we may not like it. Time rules us. We may say that I like it in the material world, but time will push us out. Time will force us to become old. It forces. And that forcing is a chastisement. Like when one is in prison, one cannot... What's the opposite of prison, imprisonment?
Freedom.
So freedom means what?
Independence.
You can do as you like. So who... Someone says that they are free, it does not speak well for their sanity. So we are in the illusion that we're free, but we're being beaten and chastised and pushed forward always. By Krishna's energy in the form of time. So Indra is acknowledging this, that you are competent. You have the power to chastise everyone. As eternal time. Within this material world, there are many fools like me who consider themselves to be the Supreme Lord or the all in all within the universe. And you are so merciful. Without accepting their offenses, you devise means so that their false prestige is subdued, and they can know that you and no one else are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, what is Indra saying here? You're so merciful. There are fools like me, he said, who think themselves the Supreme Master of the universe. And this Indra isn't the only fool who thinks himself the Supreme Master of the universe, but everyone who has a false ego is in the category of a fool who thinks himself basically the master of the universe. Of course, we may not consciously say, I am the master of the universe, but the way that we conceive of ourselves as very, very powerful and central to everything. Everyone else we see has just a supporting role in our drama. The drama of our life is the most important thing, the only important thing. So, this is the disease of every conditioned soul. It is called the master's disease. Maybe he doesn't want to leave yet. What to do? Even though we open the door to politely suggest that it would be nice for him to go. Maybe he'll leave. We'll see. But notice that as soon as the door is open, he said, okay, I'll sit and be quiet and listen. Only because you didn't give me a seat before. So I was causing trouble. So Indra said, I'm such a fool because I consider myself to be the Supreme Lord of the all and all within the universe. But you are so merciful that without accepting the offenses of fools like me, so he's saying, although I did something so horrible, and practically speaking, actually speaking, I offended you so terribly, that you don't accept the offenses of fools like me. So he's actually praying in a way that Krishna not take offense by his horrible actions. And rather than being offended, you as the Supreme Father, as the Supreme Spiritual Master, you devise means or ways so that such persons, their false prestige is subdued. So what does it mean that one's false prestige is subdued? What is false prestige? Yeah, so what does it practically feel like to have, when you have a false ego? Yeah, right. So that illusory feeling, because we're not the center of everything, obviously. I mean, I think myself the center of everything, but I can't convince anyone else that I'm the center of everything. What to speak of everyone else, I can't convince anyone else. So Krishna, even seeing people act with the foolishness of false ego, with the foolishness of considering themselves the center of everything, you devise means so that their false prestige, their false illusory sense of being the center is subdued. And they can know that you and no one else are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is true knowledge. So the feeling of having one's false ego subdued is not a pleasant feeling. So we rebel against it, we fight against it. But if we just accept that actually I am insignificant, but I'm an insignificant servant of Krishna, if we take the bitter pill of humility, of course bitter medicine only tastes bitter, it doesn't taste sweet. But it will have its effect, its health-giving effect. Humility allows us to understand that I am not the Supreme, but Krishna is the Supreme, And therefore, I can aham tam sava papebhyo moksha sami masacha, can surrender to Krishna. So the first paragraph here, Prabhupada explained that Krishna is fully transcendental and that his chastisement is full of good. Of those whom he chastises, and he does it from the position, not like Indra acting, trying to chastise the residents of Vrindavan out of envy and greed, but he does it out of just trying to correct them, and correcting the living entities means the removal of their false ego, which is the humiliation practically, and then the rising of the real ego, the real identity as a servant of Krishna and surrender. My dear Lord, you are the Supreme Father, the Supreme Spiritual Master, and the Supreme King, the Ruler. So it's interesting that he's putting the three into the same category, the Supreme King, the Spiritual Master, and the Supreme Father. So because even the King is supposed to think of the citizens of the kingdom as prajā, or his descendants, or his own children, and thereby he's supposed to treat them in such a way that they advance spiritually. And the purpose of culture is as a support mechanism so that people can advance spiritually, people of the earth. And the king's position, somewhat different from the brahminical position, but the king's position is to ensure that the culture remains intact and doesn't degenerate, because the culture is supposed to elevate people and is based on the knowledge given by the intelligentsia, or the brahminical class. And the brahminical class, the intelligentsia, aren't speculators. All their knowledge and whatever wisdom they have isn't coming from their own minds, but it is coming from Shastra. Therefore, you have the right to chastise all living entities whenever there is any discrepancy in their behavior, because you came from the Spiritual Master. Because these three only chastise for the benefit of their subordinates. The Father, the Spiritual Master, and the Supreme Executive Officer of the state were always the well-wishers of their sons, their students, and their citizens respectively. As such, the well-wishers have the right to chastise their dependents. This also implies that those who are not well-wishers don't have the right to chastise. Because if someone who's your well-wisher chastises you, then we take it, okay, it may be hard for me to accept or hard to understand, but I know that he's doing it for my good, and he's in a superior position, he knows better than I do, and he's doing it for my good, therefore I accept it. But if we think that someone is inimical to us and they chastise us, then we don't take it. Even though we may not say anything, they may be in a superior position, so we may not be allowed to say anything. But inside, it does not sit properly in our consciousness. Have you ever been chastised in your life? Of course, everyone has been. Do you remember the last time you were chastised? Is it by someone who is your well-wisher, or someone who you're not sure?
Not sure.
And how did you take it? Difference between outside and inside, or what? How did you take it?
I'm not sure if anything was partially correct, actually. But it was more because of his dissatisfaction for me, not because he wanted me to do better.
So how did you take it?
I forgot it.
Yes, yes, yes. Then inside said, no, no, no. The well-wishers have the right to chastise respectively their dependents. For your own desire, you appear auspiciously on the earth in your eternal varieties of forms. You come. So why do you come? You come to glorify the earthly planet, and specifically to chastise persons who are falsely claiming to be God. In the material world, there is a regular competition between different types of living entities to become supreme leaders of society. After being frustrated in achieving the supreme position of leadership, foolish persons claim to be God, the supreme personality of God. Do you know anyone who claims to be God? Yeah. Is that person God? No. He's bluffing. A so-called religious person, spiritual person, or just one of the... There are many such foolish personalities in this world, like me. An Indra is putting himself in that category of a fool who thinks himself the center of existence. And then, when we think ourselves the center of existence, when something happens that doesn't go according to our plan, what do we do? Only when one is as pure as you, all the rest of us become angry. We become angry, we lament, plan revenge, we do so many things. We work, okay, you won this one, but next time I have a better plan and I'll go around you. Because you don't know who I am, and you will find out who I am. Well, who are you? I'm me. Well, who is me? Well, you'll find out. You'll see. One day you'll understand who I am. Insignificant soul, of course, that's who you are. But if you tell someone, oh, you're an insignificant soul, they'll take it as an insult. All you are, all you can ever be, is an insignificant soul. 1/10,000th the tip of a head of a hair in size. Just imagine how small that is. And here we are, here I am, thinking myself so important. And if you dare to get in my way, you shall find out. There are many such foolish personalities in this world as me. And what happens if one, this is the fault in being successful in this world. The fault that comes when one is successful, that means gains some kind of power in some way, either wealth or position or something. The fault is that one has a tendency to become God, and one thinks, I've done this by my ability, and therefore I become God. But actually, our ability, our size is only 1/10,000th the tip of a head of a hair in size. So we can't actually do anything by our own ability. We can propose, and then it's up to Krishna to sanction. And then, in due course of time, when they come to their senses and understand who they actually are, they surrender unto you and again engage themselves properly by rendering service unto you. And that is the purpose of your chastising persons envious of you. So he's saying that you are chastising of me. and actually Krishna didn't even chastise Indra, he just taught him in such a way that he would realize himself that he was insignificant and that Krishna was unlimitedly powerful. My dear Lord, I committed a great offense unto your lotus feet by being falsely proud of my material opulences, not knowing your unlimited power. So every little power we have, we tend to think it is very great. And we take shelter of that power, but that power is only a gift from Krishna. And it's something like alone only. Just alone. And then at some point, the loan is taken back. And it's very frustrating because I thought this ability, this power was mine, and I thought it was practically speaking me. And then it's taken away, and I don't know who I am. So many people have this, an identity crisis, they call it. I was able to do something, and then I lose that ability. And there's no ability that we have in this world on the physical, mental, intellectual level. There is nothing, no ability, no facility that we have that we can't, that cannot be taken away. It's a very, all the things that we think of ourselves as we can do better than others, and we become proud of that, oh, I can do this better than him. Look at him trying to do this, and I could easily. And then, boom, just like that, we can lose it, because it's just Krishna giving us something, and then just as easy as he gave us, he can take it away. What does that mean? A message from Hathi Prabhu. He's in Karata.
He's just coming, his flight landed. So that's why the message.
That's nice to hear. You bring him some prasadam? Dear Lord, I committed a great offense unto your lotus feet, being falsely proud of my material opulence. Pride and falsely pride, proud. I mean the same thing, because all, basically all pride is false. Not knowing your unlimited power. Therefore, my Lord, kindly excuse me, because I am fool number one. Kindly give me your blessings so that I may not act so foolishly again. If you think, my Lord, that the offense is very great and cannot be excused, then I appeal to you that I am your eternal servant. You appear in this world to give protection to your eternal servants and to destroy the demons who maintain great military strength just to burden the very existence of the earth. As I am your eternal servant, kindly excuse me. So he's humbly begging for Krishna to excuse him because he's done something so terrible. He's tried to destroy all of Raja. Just because Krishna stopped the sacrifice, look how angry he became. He tried to destroy all of Raja. If someone slaps me, maybe I can say, for no reason, I could say it's fair that I slap him back. But if someone slaps me and then I decide to kill him and all his family members, then one could say that my false ego has. There was once a king in Persia, and he became angry at someone. His minister gave some advice that he didn't like. So he told one of his servants, kill him. So story for this. Right. And then, the servants knew that, we know the king, that after a few days he'll lose his anger, and this minister, he's very attached to, because the minister is very wise, and in a few days he'll be lamenting that oh, why did I have him killed? And then, so therefore we won't kill him, even though the king has ordered us to kill him. We won't kill him. Then in a few days he'll call for him again and be lamenting, and we'll say, oh, actually we didn't kill him. And then he'll be so happy, and then he'll reward us. So they took him away, servants took him away, but didn't kill him. They just had him hide. Then after a few days, the king had some problem that he needed some to talk to, how to solve. So he was lamenting, why did I have Croesus killed? So the two servants who were there said, actually, king, just wait one moment. And they brought Croesus back, and they said, here he is. And the king was so happy to see him. And then he killed the two servants because they disobeyed him. So Ezra saying, because the king, because that's the tendency. When one has such a position of power to become self-proud, how dare you disobey me, even though you did the right thing, but you have disobeyed my order. You must die for that. This is what pride does to someone. It's both ego and pride. So Indra's become very, very humble, saying, please, I'm your servant, please excuse me. Thank you, Lord. And then he said, I'm your servant. And then the rest was just a prayers that he offers, an obeisance that he offers, acknowledging that he's the servant. But you are the supreme personality of Christ. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, because you are the supreme person and the supreme soul. You are the son of Vasudeva, and you are the supreme Lord Krishna, the master of all pure devotees. Please accept my prostrated obeisances, bowing down with this jeweled crown touching the earth of Braja. You are the personification of supreme knowledge. You can appear anywhere according to your desire, in any one of your eternal forms. So powerful. You are the root of all creation. All creation comes from you, and it is nourished by you, just like the root gains the water that nourishes the whole tree. So without Krishna, the whole creation doesn't get its nourishment, and it will wither and die. You are the root of all creation and the supreme soul of all living entities. It's like, what does that mean, that he's the supreme soul of all living entities? It's like it's the soul that gives life to the body. So the super soul is the soul that gives life to the soul. So therefore, Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was known as Vishwamara, the maintainer of the Vishwa, because he gave life to everything and everyone. And then he speaks of his specific transgression. Due to my gross ignorance, I created a great disturbance in Vrindavan by sending torrents of rain and a heavy hailstorm. I acted out of severe anger caused by your stopping the sacrifice which was to be held to satisfy me. But, my dear Lord, you are so kind. You are so kind to me that you have bestowed your mercy upon me by destroying all my false pride. I therefore take shelter of your lotus feet, my dear Lord. You are not only the supreme controller, but also the supreme master of all living entities. You have the right to chastise me, and the chastisement is meant for my good. And you have chastised me and removed my illusion that I am central in the universe and so powerful. You have showed me that it is you indeed who are unlimitedly powerful, and whatever little power I have is your gift. In any way, compared to the power that you have, my power is insignificant. So you have chastised me and you have shown me that, my Lord, please forgive me, and please, because you are the supreme spiritual master and father of all living entities, there's no need to chastise me any further, I think. Because he's afraid. Because if someone is little and has just a little bit of power, and won't even have less power than you, and they want to chastise you, you don't care because you have more power than them. But if someone who has unlimited power decides they want to give you trouble, and they have unlimited power, that's a cause of great fear. So Indra wants to, trying his best to ensure that Krishna smiles kindly upon him. And now Krishna is going to reply. Any questions? This reply. Krishna spoke. He smiled beautifully and replied in a great voice like a rumbling cloud. What a wonderful... His voice was like a rumbling cloud, very deep and grave. And he smiled beautifully. This is what he said. My dear Indra, so far, not too heavy. I stopped your sacrifice just to show you my causeless mercy and to remind you that I am your eternal master. I am the master not only of you, but of all the other demigods as well. You should always remember that all your material opulences are due to my mercy. No living entity can independently become opulent. One must be favored by my mercy. So when we go to the temple or the church or the masjid or the whatever, synagogue, most people pray, it is an acknowledgement. They pray to God just like Indra did, offering so many words of prayers, and then they take out their list. Not their to-do list, but their I want list and their request list. But that's good, because it's much better than forgetting that without blessings from above, we cannot gain any success. It's not by our endeavor alone that we gain success, because it's and it's not by desire alone that we gain success. There has to be sanction from above. That is the meaning of Anumanta and Upadasta, Anumanta Chabharta, Bhokta Maheshwara. Everyone should always remember that I am the Supreme Lord, Krishna says. I can show anyone my favor, and I can chastise anyone. So this is how Krishna talks to the demigods when they're a little out of line. But this is not how he talks to the Vrijvasis. Because if someone says to you, everyone should always remember that I'm the Supreme Lord, No living entity can act independently. Come up. Remember that all your opulences, whatever gifts you have, are by my mercy, and I can show anyone my favor, and I can chastise anyone. So what? How will a living entity react to such words, saying that they're true, accepting that they're true? But how will a living entity act? But you'll be good, won't you? But there won't be any love. You'll be good. You'll be very, very good. But what will be the motivating factor for your goodness?
Avoiding punishment.
Avoiding punishment and wanting reward. So this is the simplest, albeit the lowest way, Krishna gains obedience from living entities in this world. It is better than the way of dealing of the atheists. They don't acknowledge anyone is above them, and this is the contemporary way of trying to gain success, using one's own power, the strength of one's desire, the strength of one's determination. It depends on that. And someone who is not successful, it's because their desire isn't strong enough, etc., etc. And that's by my desire and my power, I shall do everything. So that's very contemporary. That's complete illusion. But this also is a way of gaining, this is the way of rulership of the king and dealing with the prisoners, basically, because Indra's just been quite dead. So he's being dealt with in this way. But this is not how Krishna deals with his devotees. If I find someone overpowered by false pride, in order to show him my causeless mercy, I withdraw all his opulences. So with causeless mercy like that, mostly we'd like not to get causeless mercy, we'd rather have, maybe he'd ignore me, that would be better. But yet, false pride is such a poison, slow-acting poison. And we see this also in the world, that no one continuously has good luck only. And there's a famous story about Kung Fuchi, who none of you know by that name especially. His anglicized English version of his name is Confucius. And he used to throw the I Ching, which is a way to understand the future. So when he, at one point he threw it and he got an understanding of the present, actually, that it was the height of success. So that, in one sense, is what everyone wants. All success. But when Confucius knew this, his heart trembled in fear, because he knew that failure must always follow success. It's just a matter of time. That's the nature of this world. And this is also explained in the 8th canto of the Bhagavatam, when Lakshmi Devi, who is Sansa, she only gave herself unflinchingly and without giving up her chanson nature. She only saw one person who was qualified to have good fortune all the time. Because only a faultless person deserves to have good fortune all the time. Because if our character is faulty, and our fortune also must be faulty, because we don't deserve it, because we have faults. So she gave her garland to marry Lord Narayan. So everyone else, in dealing with fortune, fortune always acts in a flickering way. So therefore, Lakshmi Devi is known as Chamsala. So that's what Krishna said to Indra at a very closet. Because I teach the person that you are not the supreme, that you are not the center, that you are not independent. And this lesson, even though it's a hard lesson to learn, it's the most valuable lesson to learn. Because it is a lesson that at the end of our life will serve us very well. Okay, we'll end here and continue to follow Krishna in. Okay. And then his prayers, and then Sarabi's prayers. So now Indra has offered his prayers, saying he learned his lesson, begged forgiveness. Krishna's replying that he was actually indeed very kind to him. He taught him in such a way that he really learned his lesson. And he taught as an expert teacher teaches. That he let him learn the lesson. Because sometimes the people tell us things. We don't listen. But if we learn them ourselves, then the lesson goes in very deeply. So Krishna arranged a circumstance where Indra would learn from himself that he was not supreme, but rather Krishna was supreme. Okay.
How does one learn to see that it's Krishna who's giving one chastisement when, like you were saying, if you think that the person who gave the chastisement was something the world was doing, so I don't need to listen. I don't need to pay attention to that because, you know, that person, I don't respect them.
So what's the question?
How do you learn to see that it's Krishna who's giving you the chastisement?
Well, it sounded like the question was more, how do you learn that Krishna is your well-wisher? That's the first step. First step is how do you accept that Krishna is your well-wisher? And second, then how do you see, knowing that he's the well-wisher, then it's easier to see all his, whatever happens, or difficult is it chastised. So you have to do it step by step. We can talk more about it tomorrow.
So the first thing is the most important.
Because have that. Because superficial won't. It will get knocked over if your realization is on the surface. It will get knocked over by the forces of life. So it has to become very deep. Salam kore bhajan kore mrityu jamne hoy. The test of our sadhana, the test of our bhajan, the test of whatever we've done in life will be at the time of death. So then we will be able to see Krishna, Krishna's hand. If we practice in life, then there is some hope by his mercy that we'll be able to hold on to his feet. That time. But if we don't even practice in life, how will we hold on at that most disturbing time? So we make the attempt, we try our best, we associate with devotees, we pray, we see our faults, we become humble, ask for mercy, try our best, associate with devotees, be just with, after advance, chant Hare Krishna sincerely. It's a process of advancement. There's more, of course, to say. But not now. Okay, Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.